With the recent ice and snowstorms, and not to mention the incredibly high winds, many roofs have been damaged. And storm damage is not always as obvious as missing shingles or leaks. It could be a little more complex than that. So get a free inspection from the professionals at Unlimited Commercial and Residential Roofing. They proudly serve all of Central Kentucky and are Kentucky natives, veteran-owned, and are licensed and insured with a 5-star rating. If there's storm damage, you could get a roof for as little as $1,000. Also, if you mention the podcast, you're going to get a $100 rebate off your new roof. So give my pastor and friend, Chris May, a call for your free inspection. And give him a follow on Instagram, at Roofing Reverend. Give him a call at 859-544-4900. Or visit them online at commercialroofingky.net. That's commercialroofingky.net.
Oh, that was a bite. Fish on.
Okay, so real quick, if you guys notice some of my previous podcasts clipping really bad, I have to apologize for that. I don't know what happened, but I recently switched just this past week from Anchor to Buzzsprout, and in the switch, somehow my episodes decided to, when they were reissued on Apple and Spotify and all these other places, they were clipping really bad, and I did not realize that in the beginning, so I apologize about that. I had to go back in and remaster everything, but everything should be good from here on out. So just to get that out of the way, I wanted to apologize to you guys if you guys were trying to listen to these episodes. Maybe some of you new listeners and were like, oh my gosh, this quality is awful. I had no idea. But I got that all that fixed. Anyway, so this guy, his name is Mike Finch. He wrote me on Instagram. He said he didn't care if I used his name. I actually asked him if I could share this story because I thought it was kind of cool. And it kind of shows how awesome catch and release is. I never knock people for eating fish, but I'm a huge advocate of catch and release on certain species especially. And this kind of goes to show how to elaborate on catch and release, kind of how it can work in a lot of areas. So this guy named Mike Finch, he said he fishes a pond. I didn't ask the size. I didn't imagine it was real big. But he wrote in to me on Instagram, and he said he remembered the story of me talking about a guy that caught the same bass 3 times back to back to back. And he said, you know, this isn't exactly like that. He said, but over the last 3 years, he said he's caught the same bass 4 times. And he said he knew it was the same bass because it's got this particular black spot near the back of it, I think. But he sent me a video. You can check out that video on his TikTok. If you have TikTok, it's MikeFinch7. But I'm also going to try to share that video of, or at least one video of the bass on my social media pages, the Evolving Angler Podcast Facebook page, and on Instagram at the_evolving_angler. So that way you guys can check him out there as well. That's kind of cool that, you know, the whole catch and release process allows him to catch this bass multiple times. I think me and Chris Mann talked about it on the last podcast. We were talking about catch and release, especially in some of these smaller bodies of water that don't get stocked. You know, in general, really any fish that's not going to be restocked. If you get a lot of people catching and taking, it can eventually lead to some decline of the numbers of fish on some of these smaller reservoirs. But yeah, it's really cool that this guy caught the same bass 4 times over the last 3 years. And he said he caught the first three. I forget what he said he caught it on, but the last time was a whopper plopper. Said he catches at different times of the year. So it's just kind of cool to hear that story. I don't know if you've ever caught the same bass more than once. And like I said, while he hasn't caught this thing back to back to back, did you hear the episode where I talked about that catching the same bass 3 times back to back to back?
I have not heard that one.
So I'll share that story again with you real quick. This guy wrote into the podcast a couple months back. He shared a story with me where him and his son had caught the same bass 3 times back to back to back, and said it had a big chunk out of the tail. They knew it was the same bass. But I didn't get pictures or anything. So I said on there, I'm not saying he's lying, but it was really cool. You know, I've actually caught the same bass twice on the bed before.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. He didn't really tell me. And it kind of made it sound like he was traveling, at least 20 feet, 30 feet or so from where they were fishing before, because they were cruising along.
Yeah, moving down the bank.
Yeah, so I don't know.
that was a determined fish.
Yeah. You know, it's. I think it caught on a jig and then a spinnerbait, then back on a jig again.
Or just an unlucky fish.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. One of those dork fish, maybe doesn't know any better. No, I don't know.
You're right.
I'm here with Drew Russell. He is the winner of the Barron River Lake BKBF event that we had a few weeks back. I know we kind of had some conflict in scheduling, but it's really good to finally have you on, Drew. Appreciate you being on the podcast, man.
Yeah, man. So I'm glad we could finally work it out. I'm happy to be here. Always happy to talk fishing.
Oh, man. I talk fishing nonstop.
There you go.
But congrats on the huge win at Barron River Lake. Now, I didn't get to fish this event, but I heard it was pretty rough conditions. I fished the Cumberland event before that one, and I got smoked. Like, I caught dinks. And
if you fish that tournament, rough conditions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, I had Mike Baird on, and he's killed it there 2 years straight. But, I did horrible. And as I mentioned then, I got on a good bite with a pink Ned rig. But I just could not produce any kind of numbers. And so I heard that the conditions down there for the Barron River Lake event were pretty tough as well. I know the water was up, wasn't it?
It was up. So for this series, we've just kind of had a series of unfortunate events when it comes to conditions, it seems like. Each of the three tournaments we fished has been pretty tough conditions. The water was up at Barron. Probably, I think it was like 9 feet over summer pool. So way up in the trees. It'd been that way for a week or so, I think. So it was tough. I mean, sometimes that can be good. It can push fish up in the shallows and you can catch them flipping and stuff and have a good time. But, the timing wasn't quite right. I think there were still some fish on the beds. I think the majority were probably post-spawn. So they didn't really have too much interest in getting up there too shallow, I think. So I think the fish were scattered and made for a tough bite.
I was, one of my questions I was going to ask you was if you noticed a lot of bass on the beds. And I don't know what the conditions were like as far as clarity, but that kind of answered that. So you said there was some still on the beds?
Well, I didn't see any on the beds. Let's put it that way. The water where I was at was, it was maybe a foot or two of visibility in the water. So couldn't see much. And a lot of areas you couldn't really get up too shallow because of the trees. And it was kind of a steeper area. So, I heard a few folks, caught some off of beds, I think. So that's the only thing I'm going off of. Okay. That. I know there are a few big fish that looked like, pre-spawn that were caught, a couple of them at least. So
yeah,
there are at least a few up there shallow still.
Are you Kentucky native?
No, I'm actually a Tennessee native. I grew up in East Tennessee, but I've been in Louisville for about 10 and a half years. So, I've been in Kentucky for a little while.
How long you been kayak fishing?
About the same period of time. I started just before I moved to Kentucky, I think. So probably 2010, I think, is when I first started. So, yeah, about 11 years or so. Man, time flies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I talk a lot about how kayaks have evolved just in the last 10 years to, there's a lot more fishing kayaks out now than there were 10 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. There were hardly any, fishing-specific kayaks when I started. I feel like maybe the Jackson, the Coosa or whatever, Drew Gregory's kayak, that was probably one of the first ones that was oriented specifically toward kayak anglers. Came out a few years after I started, I think.
Oh yeah, and it's just booming. It's the whole kayak realm has taken off. More and more people are kayaking, whether they're fishing or not. But what kind of kayak are you in right now?
I'm in a native, and it's an older one. It's a 2014 Slayer Rappel 13. Okay. So I got the pedals. It's an older one. I guess I catch some grief occasionally from my friends about having the same kayak for so long, but. It just keeps ticking along, man. I've said I'll upgrade when I need to, if something breaks, and this one just keeps going. So, I like it for the most part.
it blew my mind how fast a lot of these pedal drive, pedal driven kayaks are compared to like the motor. I had a Kaku Wahoo, I think at the time, and I had a 45 pound thrust motor on the back, and I'm down at Cedar Creek and this Hobie leaves me sitting. And I'm thinking, you know, we're getting ready to launch and, this Hobie just takes off and I'm like, I'm thinking, you know, all right, I'll beat this guy. He's got a pedal. You know, I was going to go to this cove. It just leaves me in the dirt, you know, or in the dust. And I was like, holy crap. So I don't know if yours is that fast, but it really opened my eyes just how fast some of these pedal driven kayaks are. And
for sure. Yeah. The Pro-Angler 14s are pretty quick. They're a little faster than mine. Mine's probably the same as like a 12, you know, the shorter boat, but, yeah, the speed is not the main thing for me, but it's the duration. Like, you know, I can pedal all day and cover a lot of water. It seems like more so than I personally can in a paddling.
Yeah. I've got a Nukanoo Frontier now. I've got the 10-foot and I've got the bow mount motor, which I love a lot better. I don't like pedaling, man. I'm a lazy guy. And, sure. You know, when I got the Nukanoo Frontier, I got it with the sole purpose to get a bow mount trolling motor. I've got buddies that have Nukanoo and they enjoy them. And I bit the bullet, got the 10-foot. Then I got the motor put on it. Then I got, you know, electronics and getting ready to get live scope. And so I'm like, well, I'm just decking it out now. So I ended up having to get a trailer, but I'm sporting a 10-foot and man, I love the 10-foot. It's probably not as stable as some bigger kayaks. But it is super stable, and I love being able to run a foot-controlled trolling motor like a bass boat. And so that was what I wanted. You know, some of these guys can pedal, and, you know, like I said, me, I'm lazy. You know, the least effort I can do, the better. And there's a lot of kayaks out there now, and just kind of go back, you know, 10 years ago, like you said, there wasn't a lot of options. And now I'm kind of leading up to a question, I guess kind of a good segue into one of the questions that was sent into the podcast. But, you know, there's so many options now as far as kayaks go that really, if you're spending a decent amount of money on a kayak, it's probably going to be, you know, it's probably going to get you where you need to go. It's going to be a good kayak. I'm sure there's some junk out there, but, you know, for the most part, most of the kayaks out now are fairly good kayaks. And you got some that are just, man, I adore Hobie. I just can't afford them. And, one day maybe I'll have a Hobie, but, before we go too far into this, I want to take time to address a couple of the questions that were sent into the podcast earlier this week. I posted on my Facebook and Instagram stories about sending questions in, you know, fishing related questions into the podcast. And, I would try to answer as many as I could, you know, throughout the weeks to come. So a couple of the questions sent in, we'll address today if you're cool with it. One of them being was a guy that's looking to get into kayak fishing, and he asked me, my opinion on the best kayak under $700. Now, this is kind of a difficult question to answer because, like I said, there's a lot of options out there and everybody has their own opinion. You know, I think, you know, say I think my kayak is very stable. Somebody may think my kayak is not very stable. And so everybody's different. It's almost like everybody's got their own shoe that fits in the kayak room.
For sure.
And so as far as the best kayak under $700, you know, it's really hard for me to put an exact kayak. I will say this. I owned an Ascend 12T. Was it super stable? Absolutely not. You know, I would go through rapids, I shouldn't say rapids. I would go through shoals. It would, you know, get water in the hole a little bit and it would be extremely unstable. But now could I stand and fish on it on, you know, a lot more calmer waters? Absolutely. You know, I think I paid right around $700 for it. And it was a good kayak. Listen, I fished out of that thing for 2 years and it got me where I needed to go. I caught fish out of it. I floated a new river with it several times. You know, I probably flipped that thing 5 times. But to say that there's an actual kayak that I could say, you know, what I personally think and you could say what you personally think, you know, it's just a really tough question to answer. You have kind of any suggestions on a kayak, you know, under $700 for people to try it? Cause I want to say it like that. It should be suggestions because everybody's different.
I think I'm going to echo your sentiment, Nick. it's very difficult, a difficult question to answer. And just to kind of reiterate your point, I think if someone would ask me that question, you know, 5 years ago, I could narrow it down to like two or three boats, you know, pretty quickly. Be like, this is probably your best bet. And now I don't even know the options. How, you know, there's so many options for at, at that price point. Just so many options in general that I don't know. And I haven't been in all of them. So it is a difficult question. Usually when someone asks me, what's the best bang for my buck? You know, I got $500, $600, $700 to spend. I want a good kayak. Usually I tell them to look at the used market, you know, stick with a well-known brand, in decent shape, and you're probably going to get your money's worth. I feel like kayaks in general are, you kind of get what you pay for, right? So, you know, to a point anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, stay away from the Sun Dolphins at Walmart. If you can, you know, if you can't afford a brand new boat, I would suggest looking on Facebook or wherever people list used boats for sale and check those out. It's in decent shape. I know the features that I like in a kayak, you know, personally. I'll kind of suggest those, specifically like a framed, you know, seat, you know, kind of the lawn chair style seats that pretty much all kayaks have now. That's kind of a must for me. You know, things like that I throw out and then just kind of let them see what they can buy, I guess.
Yeah, I'll kind of echo you on the Sun Dolphin. My first kayak was a Sun Dolphin. And dude, if I didn't flip that thing 30 times, oh my gosh. I mean, listen, it got me on the water. And if that's all you can afford, cool.
But exactly.
I would rather save up another 150, 200 bucks and get something a little more stable. But you said it best right there, the used market. And I'm so glad you said that, because kayaks are basically plastic. They're not going to rot as long as somebody is taking care of them. Sure, they might have some rash on them. That's part of the character. But as long as they don't have cracks or anything like that, you know, you're probably going to get a really good deal on a used kayak. My Keku Wahoo was used, actually. And the guy had already fabricated the motor and stuff in it. And so, you know, on the back. So I bought that thing used. I got it for like $550, and it was like a $800 kayak new, not counting everything on it. It came with the trolling motor, and it was pedal steered, so I could push my pedal to the right or push my right pedal forward. So it would steer that way, and I had a little throttle box. So the guy had done some work to it, and to get it for like $550, you know, there's really good deals out there like that. So
absolutely.
I think you said it best. To answer that question, it's really hard to say what I think your best kayak would be for under $700.
Right.
I would suggest going and trying some out, checking on Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, all these places where there may be some kayaks, and post on Facebook, you know, and just try to find you a good used kayak for under $700. You can do some review search yourself on Google. And I will say this, though. I have fished out of sit-insides, and I hate it. I like a sit-on-top better for a couple reasons. One, if I have to get out, you know, it's easier to cast all day for one thing. You're not holding your rod up super high because your butt's sitting actually right on the water, if not lower than the water. And so casting can be kind of difficult. If you got to get out, use the bathroom, or got to get out and you want to wade fish a little bit, it's a little bit tougher to get out of a sit inside. And, one thing that I have witnessed happen more times than one is watching a sit inside fill up with water and sink.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least if you flip a sit on top, chances are it's not going to sink and you can sit there and hang on to it, which I've done. But that's some things to think about. I would get a sit on top if I was going to get a fishing kayak. Now, another question sent in was, let's see, what is a good basic rod and reel bait caster setup for someone starting out? You got any suggestions on that?
So are we talking brand specific, or are we talking, generically?
Probably brand specific, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it. Like, you know, maybe sure. Shimano. Makes sense.
I think if you stick with, you know, the top three or four major brands, you're probably going to be fine. I haven't bought a rod or reel in probably 2 years, which is really strange for me. So I don't have a good pulse for what's available right now. I just haven't been in the market recently to keep up with everything. But I can tell you this. I don't know if you consider this beginner or not, but it's probably a mid-level, I guess. But I really enjoy the Daiwa Tatula reels. I have the CTs. I think they're like $130 maybe now, new. I think they were less than that when I bought them, but I have a few of those. So they've performed great. I've had a few for ever since the first ones came out. I don't know, 6 years, 5 years ago. I'm not sure. And I've put a lot of time on the water and really solid reels. I like them. They cast really well.
Tested and tried.
They are. Yep.
I will say this, and I still have like three, is the Silvermax. When somebody tells me,
okay, yeah,
I guess, you know, when they say like a starting out setup or, you know, basic rod reel setup, as far as, well, my mind immediately goes to like the Black Max and Silver Max. And I,
sure,
I'm
sure.
only saying yep. this about the Black Max because I've only owned one and it kind of went into shambles on the second muskie that I caught. Now it's not rated. I mean, obviously you shouldn't target muskie with a Black Max. But I fish a lot of, I fish a lot of waters where there's muskie and bass. And, you know, for instance, Cave Run, and I love when people say there's no fish on Cave, no bass on Cave Run Lake because it's just more for me. There is monster bass on Cave Run. And I've pulled bass and muskie off the same laydown back to back. So, I mean, not to get into that whole story, but, you know, there's a lot of good bass on Cave Run. I fish a lot of, muskie waters for bass. And so I caught one muskie. It was like a mid 30s muskie on a Black Max accidental bass fishing. And the second one I caught, completely just destroyed my drag. And, it was just a mess. So that reel was spent after that. But I also have three Silvermax, and I've got one reel in particular that I always take when I'm fishing like Cave Run Lake or Leaking River. And I have caught six muskie to date, even one that was like 44.
Wow.
On that Silvermax rod reel, it's a medium heavy, bait caster rod. And I don't know the ratio on the reel, right offhand. It's mid ratio reel, and I've caught six muskie to date on it, and it is still working like a tank. So if I had to suggest, not knocking Black Max, heck, the internals may be the same. I don't know. I may just be lucking out, but I usually suggest a Silvermax, bait caster or spin reel. I've got both. I've got two Silvermax spin reels. I got three Silvermax bait casters. And, you know, I don't buy a lot of this expensive stuff. Like me and Mike Bear talk, it definitely helps, but I can't afford a $400 rod and a $300 reel, you know, so I've got those Silvermaxes, and man, I've caught a ton of fish. I actually caught a small sturgeon on a Silvermax as well. Those things fight hard. I've caught big hybrid on my Silvermax combos. So if I always had to suggest one, I always say Silvermax. And I think the spin reel and the baitcaster combos, I know Sportsman's Warehouse has them for like $70. So it's not a lot to spend to get a decent setup to get you on the water and catching some fish, and, you know, something you can rely on, even if you hook into a little bit bigger fish. You know, if you're looking for something for basic, I always suggest a Silvermax. That's just my go-to. Just because that's what I trust and what I've used. And I mean, I've got other stuff, but I'm telling you, it's hard for me to put down a Silvermax. But anyway, we'll kind of dive into this thing. I hope I answered those questions best as I can for those listening. And also, you know, I want to encourage you guys to continue to send your questions in. I've got more I'll answer on the next podcast. Please keep sending those questions in. I love hearing from you guys. And just shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram, and I'll be answering those questions as soon as I can on these episodes. I know we're doing some bass talk today, but as always, I got to tell you about some amazing musky baits and how to get 10% off. Because you guys know I'm a musky guy too. I like to fish for a lot of different species. And so for any musky guys and gals out there, listen up. I want to tell you about Chubby Chasers Custom Bucktails. These baits are benchmark quality at an affordable rate. And they offer custom bucktail, marabou, and flashaboo models with unlimited blade choices. They're also the creators of the Bush Buster Musky Jig. I personally have a couple of these, and man, they are the ultimate throwback presentation. When a musky rows in on the 8 and it won't eat, it can be very frustrating. But we've had great success pitching these jigs upstream, letting them tick the bottom right back down to the fish, twitching it in their face and watching them absolutely choke on it. It's a great bait for those late follows or those non-aggressive fish. So shoot them a message on Facebook or Instagram. Their Facebook is Chubby Chasers Custom Bucktails, and their Instagram is Chubby Chaser Customs. Shoot them a message and place your order today. Tell them the Evolving Angler Podcast sent you, and you're going to get 10% off your order. Go get them. You know, Barron River Lake is one of the lakes I've not fished before in Kentucky. Have you fished it a lot? Did you have a lot of experience on that lake?
Me and Barron have an odd relationship. I haven't fished a lot on Barron. Probably a total of maybe 6 or 7 times, I guess. But I think I was thinking back. I think I've fished 4 tournaments on Barron. I've won 3 of them and got 2nd place in the other one. So
holy crap!
And I
dude.
Honestly have no I have no idea why that is. It's not really. I consider my wheelhouse kind of deeper, clearer, smallmouth. You know, that's like I love that stuff. I can do a little bit of everything, but for whatever reason, I think it's just coincidence. I've done really well fishing Barron River Lake for some reason.
You're doing something right. You know, you was talking about smallmouth, man. I felt right at home on Del Hollow, even though it took me like 2.5 hours to get going in that event. I'm totally down. Sure. I feel you. Clear smallmouth lakes. Oh, you know, I whether I win or not, I feel more comfortable on those lakes. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the same boat. And just to touch on Del Hollow real quick, I went down to the lower end of the lake, thought I was going to catch a smallmouth, and about 3.5 hours later with 0 bites, I backed up and headed up the lake and caught a few largemouths. So usually, if I can target smallmouth, that's usually my first shot. But
did you
anyway,
did you finish pretty well on that event?
No, I finished like in the teens. I caught 3 fish, I think, there at the end of the day, and kind of salvaged a few points, I guess, for the series. But no, it wasn't good. I haven't been practicing at all. I haven't practiced for an event this year. Sometimes I feel like that. I think that would hurt me because I wasted half the day down there. I think I would have figured that out pretty quickly in practice. But other times, I don't know. I feel like I guess I'm just not good at free fishing in a kayak because a lot of times I feel like it just doesn't help me. So I just go out and just wing it, you know, and try to figure things out the day of the tournament.
Well, I think you're sitting 4th in the AOY race now, right? Or have you looked?
yeah, something like that. 4th or 5th or something. Yeah, I'm not sure. Which is a little crazy considering that I caught, I think, 4 fish over the first 2 events. If that tells you how tough those events were.
Cumberland,
I only caught 1 fish at Cumberland.
Yeah, Cumberland
was
awful.
It was brutal, man.
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm going to edit this out.
Yeah, no, let's not go there. I don't want to think about it either. It was brutal. So I was just happy to catch a few fish at Barron, to be honest. Once I had actually caught a limit, it was nice.
So what's the structure like there? Is there a lot of timber or?
There's a little bit of everything there. There's not too much grass, I don't think. Anyway, I haven't seen much grass there. It has. I was kind of fishing mid, I guess it's going to consider mid lake. It's kind of weird shape, but kind of mid lake. It was steeper banks for the most part. But it was a little tricky, like I said, because the water was so high. So I was actually fishing kind of off the bank. I was fishing in like 10 to 15 feet of water most of the day. And I think a lot of people were up shallow and it worked for a few people. But yeah, the bites were just tough to come by.
Yeah, I know in theory, you know, fish will usually move up with the water. But man, I just could not, you know what? I'm going to talk about it. Heck with it. You know, back to Cumberland, because I didn't fish Barron and I know the water was up there. Back to Cumberland, man, I was fishing shallow and I know guys that call them shallow wherever I was at. I guess they just didn't want to bite whatever I was throwing, but I was trying to throw, you know, I was trying to hit that top 5 foot, you know, section of the water column. And I never got anything.
Yeah. That was brutal. I got out there and pretty early, first 45 minutes or something, I caught a nice one, like a 18 or 19 incher or something on a chatterbait, kind of on this flat area. And, you know, I was thinking, okay, we can work with this. We can figure this out. And that was literally the only bite I had for the rest of the day. So it was, that was brutal. Props to Mike and whoever else caught fish that day, because I definitely couldn't figure it out.
Well, I'd pre-fished on Cumberland. I caught a couple little spots and I was like, okay, you know, and I was throwing a spinnerbait, which it was real windy. And then day of the event, it didn't seem like there was a lot of wind toward later until later in the day. So I didn't really throw much of a spinnerbait. I just couldn't get anything going.
Yep.
It was awful.
It was brutal. I mean, I launched with probably 7 or 8 people, and maybe like 1 or 2 people had 2 fish, or maybe 1 person had 2 fish at the most. So it was, it was rough.
Yeah.
Rough timing for sure.
I'm not going to say this guy's name, but I launched with like 5 people, and he hadn't pre-fished, and he was like, he hadn't even seen the lake, and yeah. I knew it was awful. And we were all getting ready to launch. He said, man, this should be 1st through 5th place right here. This is a great place to fish on the lake. And I'm thinking, man, yeah, I don't know about that. You know, and then I seen him later. I seen him later in the day. I'm not going to tell on him. He seemed like a really good guy, but it was funny. I seen him later in the day. He said, I can't catch fish. He said, I'm crankbaiting and everything. I said, brother, I feel you.
Yeah.
I should have brought a cast net or something. But it was funny to just see how his demeanor changed that whole day. Seeing him like 6 hours later, he was so frustrated. Poor guy. But sorry. Okay. We're talking about a totally different event. I'm sorry. But all right. Back to Barron River. So you, did you feel pretty confident going into this event? I know you said you didn't get to practice, right?
I didn't get to practice. I didn't necessarily feel confident, but I didn't, I don't know. I didn't have expectations. Right.
You did pretty good on this event, right? Or on, you know, on this lake before, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I went back to the same area where I won a tournament a few years ago. It was a little earlier in the year. It was kind of a pre-spawn deal. But I was thinking, okay, we're probably spawn, post-spawn time. So there's probably fish in that area somewhere. So I'm just going to go there and try to figure out, see if I can get a bite. So, yep, that's what I did. I had low expectations. Literally, I mean, I fished a Hobie event at Watts Bar, early in the year. I caught like 1 tiny spotted bass, I think, in 2 days or something like that. Wow. And then these Bluegrass KBF events were just brutal. So it's like, I definitely didn't have much confidence, from my recent, tournaments. I just kind of went in with little or no expectations. And sometimes I think that helps, it just kind of freed me up, and I just kind of went down the bank and fishing what I felt comfortable, and it worked out. Sometimes you got to get lucky to win a tournament, to be honest.
Oh, definitely.
You got to have a lot of things go right. And even in small tournaments, it's tough to win one. So I do not take that for granted.
Oh, man. Well, you definitely did something right, pull out another win on that lake. Walk us through the day, if you don't care. Like when did you get your first fish? How long have you been fishing?
Yeah. My general method is to start out, usually anyway, is to start out with like reaction baits. I like just cranking and winding for the most part. So that's what I did. I started like a buzz bait, crankbait, spinnerbait a little bit, probably for like the first 30 minutes, just kind of moving down the bank, covering water. I didn't have a bite. So I started backing off the bank a little bit and just kind of watching my electronics. And I went kind of over a little pocket. And, saw some fish on there. Kind of looked like bass that were oriented kind of near the bottom. I was like, okay, that could be something. So I kind of backed off and threw a shaky head on there. They're about probably 12 feet deep or something. First cast, and I caught one on the shaky head, like not big. I think he was like 14 and a half inches or something. So, but it's always good to get that first fish in the boat, right? So, So I was like, okay, maybe this is something. Kind of just went around. This is just kind of a little small pocket, kind of right off the main lake, right at the start of a creek. And I went around, probably made like 4 casts around that little pocket. And then I caught my biggest one of the day, which is, it's not very big. It was like 17 and something. I can't remember exact, but a nice fish. So I was like, okay, this could be something. So I've spent most of the day kind of fishing deeper with that shaky head, and I didn't catch a ton of fish. I caught probably like maybe 12 fish throughout the day. So I called a few times. A lot of them were like 14 inches, so I was calling like 1/4 inch at a time or something. So,
yeah.
But I caught most of my fish on a shaky head, but oddly enough, I was kind of preparing because it had been a few weeks since I'd fished. So I went back and looked at my pictures just to kind of refresh my memory. And I actually caught only, I think one of my keepers was on the shaky head, oddly enough. And the other ones were, let's see if I remember correctly. My five keepers were on four different lures. So I did spend a lot of time kind of fishing that shaky head in the same depth range, but I also, just did a lot of junk fishing, you know, just fishing what was in front of me. As I moved down the bank, I would generally like move down a bank with a spinner bait or a crank bait or something like a square bill. And then fish that same stretch with a shaky head. Right. So, I caught a couple on a spinner bait. I caught a couple on a square bill. I caught, one of my keepers on a Cinco, up shallow. And then, so I guess like I caught four fish on other lures and then probably seven or eight fish on the shaky head. But it worked out as only I think one of my keepers was on the shaky head.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was just a productive area, I think, basically.
Yeah. Like you said, it's always such a motivator to get that first fish in the boat. I've fished several tournaments and some that I've been skunked on and some that, you know, like Dale Hollow, where it's 2.5 hours and, you know, I had to stop, say a prayer. And I was just like, you know what, is what it is. You know, I just got to try. I got to try to do something.
Yeah.
I really did. I stopped for like 15 minutes and I was throwing into trees, getting frustrated. I threw my A-rig off and I was so mad and I was just, I don't want to talk about the A-rig. It makes me upset even talk about it. Within the first 15 minutes of the day, I don't know. I had a bird's nest in my bait caster and didn't realize it. And I'm using braid. I launched that thing and halfway through the air, it snaps.
That'll get you.
There goes my A-rig. And I went over it and it was like 13 feet deep. And I was like, I'm not fishing that thing out.
Yeah.
I was frustrated. I don't really use an A-rig much, but it was a tournament. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try.
Sure.
So getting that first one in the boat, man, always feels good. And there's been times where it seems like I may be fishing the same lure and not be catching fish. And it's like, finally, when I catch one fish, it may be 3 hours in and I'm like, okay, I've got confidence in this bait again. You know, it's just crazy how it works mentally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Crazy how it works mentally.
Yeah. One bite can change your day.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you, I guess you kind of figured out a decent bite pretty quick, right?
Pretty quick. Yeah. I caught that first fish probably like 30 minutes into the day. And then, it wasn't like hot and heavy by any means, but I would catch a fish. Probably for the first half of the day, I caught a fish every 30, 45 minutes or something. So it was a lot of casting, a lot of dragging that shaky head. But I was getting bites fairly, more than a lot of people, I guess, that day, which is all that matters.
Yeah.
Cause fish were tough to come by. So I think, I think it was just a pretty good location, which, I've always said, like, a lot of times fishing follows the same rules as real estate. You know, you've heard people say in real estate, the three rules are, location, location, location. I think a lot of times that's the same for fishing. You know, if you're around fish, you're going to have a good chance of catching them. They're not despite some days I think differently, they're not the brightest things in the water. So you can get a bait in front of them. That's all you can ask for, I guess.
Did you think you were going to be sitting pretty good when it, well, wait, let me go back it because I don't want to hit that yet. For a lot of our listeners that may not use a shaky head, or maybe they're trying to get into it, or maybe learn how to do it, do you feel comfortable elaborating on kind of how you fish it?
Yeah, absolutely. I have probably like one go-to setup. I mean, there's lots of variations, but, generally what I start out with, and depends on depth, that I'm fishing, but generally it's a 1/8 to a 1/4 ounce, you know, shaky head. I've experimented with a lot of different types of heads and things. Lately I've actually been using like a small, like they call it like a swing head or whatever, where you can put your own hook on it.
Okay.
But I have some confidence in it and the hookup ratio is pretty good. So a lot of times I'll just use a zoom trick worm, you know, cheap and effective. I like black, just solid black. Again, probably doesn't matter a whole lot, but a dark color is usually my go-to, unless it's super clear water. And then it's just the more natural color. I don't get too picky about colors. And I don't really do a lot of shaking, to be honest, despite the name. It's more of a drag for me. So a lot of times I'll have my rod tip low and just kind of drag it along slowly. Pretty much just a slow drag. And you know, you'll be hitting rocks down there and that worm will be kind of squirting around, dancing around. So that's generally what I do. It works for me. Throw it on a spinning rod. My spinning rod setup is, I have 15 pound braid as a main line and then a fluorocarbon leader. I put like a long leader, probably like 15, 20 feet usually, depending on the clarity and what I'm fishing around, anywhere from 8 to 12 pound test usually. Nice. on the fluorocarbon leader. So pretty simple. That's kind of my standard setup and works okay for me.
You know, I didn't think I could totally edit that out if you want me to, because I know you're still fishing events and things like that.
Nope, not worried about it, man. Okay. I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
Yep. maybe it'll help. Maybe it'll help somebody catch a fish.
Yeah, that's how I feel. All right. So next question. Did you think you were going to be sitting pretty good at the end of the day? Because you said you caught a limit and there was a lot of guys that didn't catch a limit, right? I'm trying to think of the results on that event. I should do a little bit more research.
I feel like there was only a handful of limits, maybe 3 or 4 or something like that. I haven't looked at them in a little bit, but it was, the bites were tough. And usually I'm the type that I won't even look at the leaderboard all day, especially if I'm not catching fish. I definitely don't look at the leaderboard. But for whatever reason, I was catching fish and I was uploading them, as I caught them. So I would take a look. Yeah, like, you know, 3/4 of the way through the day, you know, I was the only one with a limit and I was ahead by quite a bit. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe we got a shot at this. And, you know, I kept calling like small calls, you know, like I would call a half inch here and there. So at that point, I felt good. No matter the outcome, because I was catching fish. I was fishing clean. I knew I was going to finish, you know, somewhere near the top. So anytime that transpires, it's a good day in my book.
Oh yeah. And definitely the way the conditions have been, like we talked, you know, finishing top 10 right
for
now.
Sure.
And those last couple of events is, man, that's gold. I would take that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I do have a question I wanted to ask you. If you could only throw one lure all year long, what would it be?
Oh man.
I like asking this question.
probably.
You don't have to be specific. You can be like a jig or whatever. I mean,
probably a shaky head. I think I have the most confidence in kind of the finesse-ish techniques for the most part. Shaky head's pretty versatile. You can fish it up shallow. You can fish it deep. I think I don't necessarily love fishing a shaky head. I'd rather be cranking and winding something, throwing a spinnerbait or chatterbait or something like that. But as far as something that would catch fish all year, yeah, I'd go like a shaky head. And even like you can put a crawl on a shaky head or whatever too. So
yeah,
that's my answer.
That's my downfall is, you know, I'm a running gunner. I've said it on the podcast before. Sure. I would rather throw crankbaits and jerkbaits.
Yep.
And when it gets a little bit warmer in the season, then it seems like these fish get a little more lethargic. It's hard for me to finesse, like I should maybe. But you know, even in the summer months, and I'll say this again, and I've said this before too, is all right. So we know, you know, bass a lot of times get lethargic in the summer, almost like they do in the winter. The bite can be kind of similar, you know, cause these bass are moving back toward these areas, you know, these winter staging areas and things. One thing that I do like to do, and I don't care to share this cause it doesn't produce like a ton of fish. Like I can go out and do this and I'm not going to catch 30 bass, but in the dead of summer, a dying fish triggers a bite all year round. And it seems like I can throw a deeper diving jerk bait in the summer, around a lot of structure, and it can produce fish for me. And that's one of the things I love doing because, man, it's so hard for me to just slow down. And like I said, that's my downfall. And that's why I won't ever be a successful tournament fisherman, is because it's hard for me to slow down. And if I can't do it with crank baits, jerk baits, spinner baits, and, you know, maybe a jig or something, man, it's hard for me to really slow down. But I love throwing a jerk bait in the summer. I can catch some bass like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that answer. I don't think many people would say jerk bait, but that's a pretty good one. That's one thing I'm not great with, to be honest, but, I have, it's funny you mention that, because I have been throwing a deeper jerkbait over the past year or two a lot more than I had in the past, and I've had pretty good results on it. So yeah, I like that answer.
It's a good summer go-to for me as well. And, you know, like I said, it's not going to put a ton of fish in the boat, but you can catch fish a lot of times.
I cut a check on Cave Run throwing a deep jerk bait a few years ago in a kayak tournament, the old bluegrass kayak anglers tournament. So yeah,
nice. Sure. See, I'm glad you fish Cave Run too. So you can attest there's some bass in Cave Run as well.
Yeah, I haven't fished a lot, but and honestly, I haven't caught any significant fish out of there. But I've seen very big fish come out of there. So absolutely, I agree.
Oh my gosh, man! I gotta say this. I was actually muskie fishing up around Bangor boat ramp,
sure.
And I was throwing a glide bait. It was like a 10-inch glide bait, and I had what I thought was a small muskie chasing this glide bait in, following it in. And I was getting ready to start figure eight, and I realized I was like, "This is a big bass." I've seen a lot of bass, and I'm not one of these guys to be like, "Oh, it was a 10-pound bass," you know, when it was really like a 3.5. Listen, if this bass wasn't 7 to 8 pounds. Oh my gosh, it was a tank.
Yeah.
Big, large mouth. And it went around halfway on the figure eight with me before it swam off. I was hoping that thing would hit. I had it on GoPro. I was hoping that thing would hit. It chased a big glide bait in. And then I had some bass lures with me. So I was throwing at it, you know, where it came from, and never seen it again. But man, I've caught a ton of big bass, a lot of big smallmouth on Cave too.
Oh, but, yeah.
But yeah. So,
I'm always hoping when I haven't been over there, that I would accidentally at least catch a muskie. I've yet to catch a muskie, so I'm gonna accidentally luck into one at some point.
Dude,
some point in my life.
The saying over there is, you know, if you want to catch a muskie, bass fish. Because
sure, yeah.
A lot of people don't realize this too. Muskie mostly feed on shad, you know, and bait fish, and so they're not out chasing these bass and crappie like people think they are. Yeah, they'll eat them, but I mean their affinity is suckers and bait fish. And so the talk there is, if you want to catch a musky bass fish, and it seems like, well, I know a lot of guys that bass fish and crappie fish it, that they've caught them on crappie jigs.
Yep.
One cool thing is that you'll have these musky guides, and I'm friends with a bunch of them, and they'll be, in the spring, they'll be trolling small rattle traps or small crankbaits for musky. And it seems like small, fast moving baits in the spring, especially for musky, man, they wear them out, but it never fails. They always hook up on some big bass, like trolling over the flats and things like that up there. I've seen some 7 and 8 pounders caught that I'm just like, but
I don't doubt it.
There is a lot of bass on Cave, and maybe I shouldn't say that because more people are going to fish it. But anyway, not to get off that soap, but yeah, man. So, you know, you grinded it out. You worked the whole day. You get this full bag, and man, ultimately came out with a huge win. And man, I just want to congrats you again on that, because of the conditions that we faced, you seem to persevere there and come out with a win. You're sitting good on the AOY, and man, I'm looking forward to where you're going to be at by the end of the year. I know Paul Averill is doing really well. I didn't fish the event or the trail last year, but from what I gather, he was up there too. And so I know there's a lot of guys that are pretty consistent, whether they win or not, they're really consistent with that top 10 area. And so I'm excited to see where you're going to be at the end of the year, man. I hope you keep grinding it out, and I hope you get a few more wins under your belt.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man. Like I said, it's, I was not the best fisherman out there. I just, things fell my way, and it worked out. And that's what you need to have happen sometimes. To get a win, but yeah, consistency is the key, especially when you're vying for kind of an angler's year thing. So yeah, hopefully I can put a few more together and catch a few more fish.
Oh yeah, keep casting, keep grinding, and
for sure.
And like I said, man, go catch a ton of more fish, and appreciate you being on a podcast.
I'll try, man. Same here, Nick. Good talking with you.